Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight here on Sweet Liberty. Once again, today is the 23rd of August in the year 2006. And last week, Alan was with us, Alan Watt. We were talking at the end of the broadcast. I wanted to talk about the language, the words, and the meanings, not just the meanings of the words, but the esoteric, and possibly in that area. Our spiritual message here tonight is one that I have sticking up, and I've done this a few times, and I'm going to do it again tonight. It's from A Course in Miracles, from the textbook, page 149. Fear of the will of God is one of the strangest beliefs the human mind has ever made. Fear of the will of God is one of the strangest beliefs that the human mind has ever made. But who gave us that fear, folks, when you think about it? And when you look at the God of the Old Testament, I can't imagine anyone not fearing the will of our Creator. And that's just part of the tricks that they've been pulling on us. Alan, thanks for being here again tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, yeah.
Yep, and that's what they've done, isn't it? They've put the fear of God.
Well, you see, you don't have to fear now. We can always give them a Prozac or a Valium.
Yes.
Because I think the Old Testament gods are a bit unstable. Yeah.
What, give the Old Testament God Prozac?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't seem to be a happy character.
How are you going to do that, Alan?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I have to ask an expert.
You know, speaking of that, which isn't our topic tonight that I wanted to address, but speaking of that, in a conversation with one of our listeners today, he mentioned that the plan in this system to have a drugged up society.
Oh, it's always been there. They've admitted that, though, in their
mm-hmm.
It's not a secret. I think it was in the 70s the British Medical Association came out with the statistics on Valium and Librium. They're kind of similar at the time. And they said that over, I think, 45% of all British women were on it. That was in the 70s.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'd imagine it'd be more even in some parts of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, they even had comedies about it, you know, where someone falls at an airport and everybody rushes out with their Valium.
Uh-huh.
And so they were really throwing all that stuff out as the great panacea, the thing, the cure-all for all your stress.
For whatever else. I was telling him that I remember back around 93, 94, when Al Gore was president, Tipper, right?
Yeah.
Tipper Gore. I guess she had had a drug addiction at one time. Or something, but she had used these psychotropic drugs, and she was giving a talk like she was an expert to a large group of people, and it was on C-SPAN.
Yeah.
And not knowing what I know today, when I saw that, Alan, all she was doing was lauding and praising the benefits and the, you know, what all of these pills can do. And I remember putting out an action alert about something, but I addressed it and I said it appears to me that their solution for anything that ails us is a psychotropic drug. And I have a vision in my mind of just a world of zombies.
Yeah, well, that's what Aldous Huxley said at that Berkeley meeting, which is on my website. You can hear it. He said that. What's wrong? What's wrong with basically giving the public something that takes all their worries away?
Is that the one that he did at the California, at the college there?
Yeah.
We got that on our website.
Yeah, and I've got it online.
Mm, okay.
And as I say, that's he was into that there, because he spoke for the elite. He was part of the Tavistock Institute,
mm-hmm.
which has massive think tanks all working on how to control the minds of the public. And he said, you know, most people today are unhappy. That's what he said.
Oh, and those are happy pills?
And yeah, and so they're for what's wrong in giving the people drugs to make them happy. They won't be realistic, they won't be living in a reality, but they'll be happy. And that is the psychiatry, the whole thing of psychiatry is geared towards not so much the root cause of a thing, but the treatment of something.
Yeah, well, Alan, think about this. They won't be happy. They won't be unhappy. Mm-hmm. They won't be happy because there are no feelings. So that's BS.
Yeah. And it's not just that, it gets me. I mean, there's more to all this. See, when you see that the inoculations and what they've done to the public intentionally, there's no doubt once you go through the history of inoculations, it's intentional. The autism and the degrees of autism up to various learning deficiencies, that's all part of the same thing which came on about the 50s onwards with the increase of inoculations.
Yes, but when they started putting the thimerosal in...
Yes,
and that's been more recent.
They were way beyond thimerosal.
Uh huh.
They put things in there which literally were meant to go to certain parts of your brain, and that is what Arthur Koestler talked about in The Ghost in the Machine. And he worked for UN think tanks to actually find ways of doing this, targeting the brain
uh-huh.
and lobotomizing the public. So they were way ahead. They'll never ever tell you the truth of what they've been up to.
Yeah, right.
But when you see they've been doing it in that area, you can pretty well go into all the other drugs, especially the tranquilizers and so on.
Well, you know what that makes me think about?
Uh-huh.
Charles Galton Darwin,
yeah.
in his book, The Next Million Years, when he talked about using hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Those hormones that, how did he say it, regulate every phase of the physical body.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought about hormones, Alan, in my mind as male and female hormones,
yeah.
you know, but there's hundreds of hormones, maybe thousands, are there?
Oh, there's so many.
They regulate the entire body.
Yeah.
And he said that in his book, and I think it was 52, wasn't it, his book?
Yeah.
The Next Million Years? Yeah. Okay, when the article that I was reading, it was from Canada, it was a doctor over there about estrogen dominance. And he said, in the past 20 years, okay, so, or did he say 40? It coincided, it had to have been the past
yeah,
40 years.
40 years,
because
yeah.
it coincided with when Darwin's book came out,
yeah.
the all of the xenoestrogens that are in, they say there are 60,000 sources of
yeah.
these xenoestrogens causing estrogen dominance, and a lot of women who can't get pregnant, or they'll get pregnant and then just immediately abort it.
Yeah.
That's what Kirk Newby told us. He said it's like a morning after pill.
That's right.
And that's why the food that is being eaten today that is so loaded with the xenoestrogens from all the pesticides and herbicides.
Oh, yeah, et cetera. That's
yes. That the bodies are just overloaded with xenoestrogens.
Yeah, and you see the effects of it. You see the effects of it in the males, where they're sort of podgy and effeminate, and the females are becoming actually a bit more masculine. So it's intentional. It was intentional.
Oh, absolutely intentional.
Yeah.
And that blew me away. I mean, it was really a revelation when I... Actually, I was talking about it. Actually, it's in the preface of the book of the Jewish persecution when we got, I was talking about the food and stuff like that. It's in that area. But to see how things like this relate, for example, in 1974, when the United Nations passed their declaration on the new international economic policy, they said right in it, Alan, that every single country, regardless of their present circumstances, will be equalized.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were doing, that was in the 70s, and when they were doing the GATT and NAFTA, you know, debate, Senator Hollings from, I think, North Carolina, mentioned that in the past 20 years, he said, it must have been 92, he said in the past 20 years, the cost of living has risen and the wages have gone down.
I said, Dan,
that totally coincides with the UN declaration of a new international economic policy.
That's right.
Jeez.
And yet even that was just a reiteration of what the League of Nations had said back in the early 1900s. They'd always just reiterate what they're already doing. And it's the way to get to that end that you actually live through. You see the wars, you see all the conflicts, you see the amalgamations of countries that come out of them. That was all part of this whole long-term agenda. And we're still going through the latter parts of that. I think it was just about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was a documentary on the public broadcasting. And the United Nations go into Africa in different countries, third world countries, and they're giving loans out to women only to start businesses up. And the idea is to bypass the males so they become secondary citizens in an economic structure. And the women, of course, take on these loans. They then love the United Nations very much and go along with all of their agendas. And this is similar to what you saw to the communist regime when they pulled out of countries like Hungary and Czechoslovakia. The males, that priority hiring for females way over the males. Most of the guys were unemployed, even during the Soviet regime. Of course, they never said they had unemployment. It was taboo
right.
to be unemployed. They just didn't include you. And so you have this abundance of women in Czechoslovakia who have better education and job skills, and they're all leaving the country, and all the guys are left behind. So the UN is continuing the same policy in other countries as the Soviets were doing.
Yes. Alan, what is this deal? I mean, is this to promulgate, to further their plan for hermaphroditic beings down the road?
To emasculate
the males and masculinize the
women?
And also
to bring us all to a state where of infertility. The fastest growing problem you have in the West is infertility amongst especially the white people.
Mm-hmm.
And the fastest growing industry is fertility, or the fertility clinics. It's the fastest growing industry in Western countries. So it will come to the stage where cloning will seem quite natural. You see, and we must all accept, well, we've got to clone to save the people, or there'll be none of us left, type of thing. It's all to bring in the new types of workers, the clone types. And when you look at the old Isaac Asimov books from the 50s, he was chosen along with Arthur C. Clarke and another author to start off the whole New Age movement. They're all high masons.
Now, how long ago did the New Age movement start?
It started really in the 1800s with Blavatsky. She was pushed out there primarily to start it off, to get the women in.
And Arthur C. Clarke, did you say?
Yeah, and in the 1950s or so, 40s and 50s, Arthur C. Clarke was promoted, and also so was Isaac Asimov, science fiction type writers who wrote into their stories what the future was going to be, because they belonged to these futurist groups and think tanks. So it was a form of conditioning us that this would be all normal, and it wouldn't seem so absurd when we actually see it happening in our lifetime. So Isaac Asimov talked to, he put out the ones on robots, like iRobot,
right,
that they put into a movie about a year ago. And then he came out with the laws for the robots, you see, for ordinary humans compared to robots. And at the time when I read it, which was back, you know, in the 60s, I thought, you know, eventually this will be humans we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because
and sure enough,
we're a separate species, and we'll see. Well, like, they're human too, really, aren't they? You know, they weren't born.
Well, remember the movie that Robin Williams played in it, Millennium Man?
Oh yeah.
Wasn't that it? He was a robot, total robot.
Yeah.
And he went to the World Tribunal three judges to be given human status.
Mm-hmm.
And his argument was, one of the judges, you have an artificial heart,
yeah,
and so-and-so has a liver, or not a liver, a kidney. And he went...
I think the third was on Viagra.
But, there you can see, you know, them promoting that. While I would like to back up a minute here, when you mentioned we were talking about New Age, I noticed that you talk about this a lot more today than you ever used to.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I would like you to do is to define, because there is a difference between people who experiences, let's say, self-evident truth through their own exploration and life experiences,
mm-hmm,
and they happen to be similar to some New Age terms.
It's more than similar. That's how a phrase comes out of their mouth that wasn't given to
them. No, but I'm talking about, I'm not New Age, Alan.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not embraced in any name brand religion. And yet I know that, I mean, if you're not a name brand religion and you say something that's not name brand religion, you're branded New Age. And I think it's important to define, or let's say differentiate, between what is New Age and what are spiritual truths, because you know yourself that in that New Age movement, many of the spiritual truths are told.
Well, any spiritual truth was always for an individual experience.
That's what I'm talking about. People who've experienced, had their own...
Not taught to anybody.
Right.
But something that came to you.
Yes.
That's why it's an unverifiable experience. You cannot verify it to another person because you experienced it.
There is a difference between people who are seeking spiritual truth.
But it's always been that.
I know, yeah, but when you use New Age, it's almost like...
The New Age was created to bring in the New Age.
Okay.
Which is the age of Aquarius.
Okay, Alan, but listen,
yeah,
Here's what I'm trying to get to. When you talk about New Age,
yeah,
it's like there's either brand name religions or there's New Age.
Uh-huh.
And there's nothing else in between. And then it leaves kind of a gap there, or it puts everybody that isn't embracing a brand name religion, any religion, it seems to pigeonhole people.
Well, if they go towards something that already has a name, they're in a religion already.
Give me an example. Give me an example right now of what, when you say...
If they go into a group, right,
okay,
like the Egging Car or whatever it happens to be, there's thousands of them out there now, but really they're all the same.
Yeah?
They all teach the same stuff, which is a mixture of Hinduism, really, primarily a form of Hinduism, without mentioning Hindu. Yeah. They mention everything else about the Hindu religion, but they don't mention Hindu. And it's to do with channeling, finding your spirit guide, your power animal, whatever it happens to be, is to bring something into you, generally through a group experience or a master to pupil type thing.
Uh-huh.
So
when people get around, let's say there's a group that meets that just talks of spiritual things.
Uh-huh.
Not religious things, but spiritual things.
Yeah.
But there's not channeling and stuff going on. That wouldn't be considered New Age.
No, if you're explaining your experiences, that's one thing. If you're going through formula and rote,
right,
then you're into an organized religion.
Formula and rote.
Yeah.
Okay, could you use an example of that?
Well, like learning mantras, learning something, learning chant.
Mm-hmm.
Formula, that's what formula is.
Okay.
And you start off with one thing, and you, just like all degrees in Freemasonry, you've got different things like that. But again, the end product is what defines it. Where do they want you to be? And you'll find with most of them, the teaching that was put out, and remember, these started as official high Freemasonic organizations back in the 1800s, Blavatsky was given a charter by the Grand Lodge of England. And the end product was to bring in a new age, the age
right.
of Aquarius,
right.
where something was going to happen that would change society, literally a new type of human being. A new type of human
okay.
being was to come out of it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I understand that the new age has been the movement itself.
Yeah.
I read that when I was, I told you when I was reading that book about, you know, Freemasonry and all that.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to the end of the book, when they were talking New Age, I said, "Oh my my, they brought the New Age thing in." And I remember making a bracket and a highlight. They, you know, made the whatever the, with the New Age, and
yeah.
I realized that. And also, I know that, it, for example, if a person talks about meditation,
mm-hmm.
Then you're branded. Oh, you're a New Ager. And I know that you've said, well, you don't have to set a certain way and all that. I understand that, and I also, when I was in the School of Metaphysics and we meditated, we sat in a quiet place, and we sat, you know, they didn't have us do yoga positions or anything, but very comfortably, and so that you could get your mind, quote, off the physical body and be able to focus within. And sometimes those types of things can help an individual. If somebody's trying to meditate and they're sitting there with their legs crossed, and then their leg starts to go to sleep, and it isn't conducive for being able to not be real conscious of the physical body and to be able to focus your attention within. So I think there's not a all-in-one, like painting everything with the same brush. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, when you find the common is slogans. See, it's like Lenin said, we shall conquer the world through the use of slogans. And it didn't stop at communistic slogans. It was to do with cultural slogans, with idea slogans, with religious slogans. And what they came out with was, we're all one. So whenever you hear this phrase, we're all one, the UN, remember, means one in French.
Oh, gosh.
And it's about to condition you subconsciously to this whole idea of oneness with the planet, the creation of an earth worship type religion, as Mikhail Gorbachev talked
about. But why would that have to be earth worship? You know, you and I were talking one time.
Uh-huh.
This is a long time ago, but I remember this was on the air, and you were talking about how our minds are connected. That a person could have a thought, and a person
yeah.
all the way on the other side of the world,
uh-huh.
that thought could be in their mind. And in a sense, in that sense, there is a oneness.
We have many things in common. See, that's the difference. We have many things in common. We have many needs in common, and basic and beyond. And it's also language, including basic telepathy. And things like that. But that's where it stops, you see. Because otherwise...
Well, then how would that thought of a one individual get into the minds of others?
Not everyone receives the idea. Not everyone receives it. I mean, it's like, if you imagine all the millions of people watching a major sports event, I wouldn't even know if it was on. Would you?
No.
So there's millions of minds that would be broadcasting if they could, but they're not. It's a different frame of mind. It's a different thought, in fact. Simple pleasure doesn't do it. There's something to do with an idea. That's an ancient description from even the Greeks who were taught by the Egyptians. That you can form a thought. In fact, they called it forms. Where
form,
a powerful
yeah.
thought becomes a form, an energy, and it could almost take on the feeling of that person, or the emotion, or the intent of that person that created it. It could take it on at the time of creation, and it would sort of wander. and gravitate to someone who was maybe on the edges of the same kind of thought but hadn't formulated the whole idea. It would gravitate towards them, and suddenly, eureka.
How would that happen?
It hits you.
How would that happen if it wasn't in in the mind?
What do you mean? And I'm not saying it's the truth. I'm saying this is what they stated. This is what the Greeks used to believe in.
Well, you know yourself, you've said it yourself, that when we become receptive, that there is that part of us that is connected, not in a physical sense, but for example, the phone rings and you know who it is.
That's right. Yeah.
Or you think
or
about
you think
somebody.
At the same time as someone next to you.
Yes.
You both burst out. Or
there, that's what I'm talking about, Alan.
That's basic natural telepathy. And all children do it all the time. And unfortunately, the school system and the monetary educational system we go through drums it out of you because they want practical results. They don't want people being able to think beyond. So they lose it. And a lot of people can't remember that they had it. And the other ones, when you talk about it, suddenly it hits them. Yeah, I used to do that with my friend so-and-so. We just burst out together and start singing the same song or saying the same thing and then laughing, you know.
Well, and as you
laugh.
Yeah, and it's the noise.
Yeah.
And it's all of the distractions.
It's the material. It's the material indoctrination we get.
Yeah.
To chase after the material. And that's where you look. In fact, that's why so many horrors are escalating and have since the beginning of the 20th.
Well, then, even people who aren't, quote, chasing after the material, when you've got a television on in the house.
Yeah.
Or a radio going, it is not conducive. Driving in the car and having the radio on, and you know some music banging around, it is a distraction.
It's more than a distraction, Jackie. I don't think people realize this basic fundamental reality. For thousands and thousands of years, people walked about a lot of their time in silence, thinking. They made their own music when they had get-togethers with family and friends. They would tell stories, they would entertain each other. All that's been taken over, all of it, has been taken over as they destroyed the family.
Yeah.
And generations now have been born getting up to a radio in the morning, driving to work with a radio blaring.
Can't go to sleep without the TV on.
And what you're doing all day long is being brainwashed with professionals, because these are corporations that put this stuff out.
Yes.
Brainwashed with someone else's thoughts.
Yes.
It's not your own thoughts.
Yes.
And as so much so, as you say, people can't even go to sleep now without it on. They don't know who they are themselves. They've never found out who they are.
And you know, when you mentioned how they used to get together and tell stories,
yeah,
I notice it about the children when they're visiting. If we're sitting eating and I start talking about something, you know, in the past, and they are just enthralled.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Tell us some more, Momo. Tell us another one." And sometimes you can't think of something because you're telling them something that happened to pop in your head.
Yeah.
But they love it. They love to hear, what did you do when you were young, and what kind of experiences, and what about the family, you know, things like that. It really does.
It's important.
Yes, it is.
It's like it's vital, you know.
Yeah, and we're going to be taking about a 2-minute break here. And when we get back on the other side, I'd like to talk about this language thing, because I'd like you to do some into that with us tomorrow.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, radio.com worldwide, freedom is now free. We need your support today at firstamendmentradio.com.
And you'll receive an MP3 CD.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North, the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression?
John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series online on the Civil War from the Old Past Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD
and judge for yourself.
War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, we're back. I was. It occurs to me, I've been going to do this and I have forgotten, and maybe one of our internet listeners would send an email to Nicholas at First Amendment Radio and let him know that when we have our break at the half hour, there's two commercials playing. And it's. I feel really badly that I just forget it after I'm off the air. But that would be nice if somebody told him about that so he could get it fixed. And
they're simultaneous, yeah.
That, what did I say?
There's two commercials running.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they're on top of each other.
Exactly. Alan, before we go into what I wanted to talk about tonight, or for you to us to talk about, I thought you might want to let our listeners know, because you've got that new DVD
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
And let our listeners know that what's going on with it.
Yeah, it's a devil's very devil, that's what it means. Because the first batch I sent out, it wasn't formulated properly.
Formatted?
The program. So I have to resend a batch out again. And it's, with everything else and the truck breaking down, it's been a hectic week and a half.
Just so people know that when they get it, I haven't gotten it yet, Alan.
Yeah, well, at least they know now of the order that's been fixed. So.
Right, and you put a note up there on the website.
That's right.
I noticed that, but I just thought for our listeners maybe that have been over there since, if anybody ordered it, if you haven't got it yet, I haven't got mine yet, but if it doesn't play right, not to get frantic.
It should be on the computer.
On the computer?
But I wanted it to play on TV as well.
Right.
And that's where the problem came in.
Okay. So you're
going
to, it was a formatting problem, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to be resending.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, a strange thing, that you probably know that the internet and discs, for instance, just like the old VHS tapes, in Europe, in different parts of the world, they play at different speeds and so on. So you can't use the same format abroad, you know that?
I didn't know that till you told me that the other night.
Yeah. And people think they're free, and again, this, we're all connected stuff. We're not free at all, because you have all these regions and areas where you can get a VHS tape sent to you, and you can't watch it on your recorder because they've got a different format, just so that you can't do exactly
that.
Yeah.
What about Canada?
We're the same as the States.
Okay.
And the region coding. And Europe is on a PAL type coding, they call it. Your NTSC here, and then in South Africa, Africa's different again, I think.
Oh my.
And so is South America, Latin America.
So different in every single one of those areas?
Yeah, and you know, it's the same machines they're selling to all the countries. They just put a little chip in there so they can't be doing anything except their own.
Well,
what's been authorized by the government.
Well, I knew that was very frustrating to you, and you were concerned about, you know, their frustration, and I just wanted to mention it so people understand stuff does happen,
and
they are going to get one that works in a DVD player. And Alan, for anybody who might not know, if you happen to have slipped in here, quote, accidentally, Alan's website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And, of course, sweetliberty.org is our website. And they're both excellent websites to visit, folks. I promise you that. Here, this book that I was reading, Alan, God's Genes and Consciousness, he mentioned the alphabet here. He says the origin of the alphabet remains the greatest unsolved mysteries of human history. Is that true?
Well, there's different theories on it. So in this world we live in, many of the sciences we're given really boil down to a bunch of theories, which keep changing. And that is true.
Well, so in other words, you don't have an origin of the alphabet. I mean, where did it come from?
The very first alphabet, you mean?
I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, we do know that the Chaldeans were chosen by invading armies. They would hire guys from the Chaldea to, because their alphabet, like the Hebrew, was numbered as well. So each letter was also a number, and they didn't have just one set of meanings. They had quite a few. And so the armies used to hire these guys to inscribe coding for them that they could then use runners, and the runners would send it to another regiment, and it was all marked on a stick, and the other Chaldean that was in another regiment could actually read it, so it was coded. So there was this alphabet plus the numerical codes and variations of those codes for thousands of years.
Uh-huh. Okay, here's what I want for you to hear what he said, so that you could comment on it. He's talking about, you know, the Sanskrit alphabet, and et cetera. And by the way, he talked in here about when people lived naturally. It was so cool. It reminded me so much of what you've talked about in the past. But he says, just a minute here, let me see. There's a word created from the alphabet. Okay. Jewish Kabbalists, is it Kabbalists or Kabbalists?
You did anyway.
Okay, and Hindu esoterics believe that letters and words created from their alphabets have several levels of meaning. Vedic scholars believe the original words in Sanskrit had four levels of meaning. First was the physical spoken word. The second was its inner meaning. The third was its vibrational force that was transmitted telepathically through prana, a subtle energy that permeates space. The final was its transcendental significance. Scientist and mystic Ishtak Bentov described the Sanskrit letters as shapes, quote, that impart certain tendencies to consciousness, making it vibratory. He said the Hebrew letter was considered to have at least three levels of meaning. The first, dealing with the inner structure of reality, of the universe itself. The second involved nature, the physical level of reality. And the third was for individual understanding and social communication. From the perspective, there's not too much I'm going to read here, but I want you to hear this so you could comment on it, because it really makes sense to me. From the perspective of these esoteric schools, if a written word evokes the appropriate sound frequencies, its subtle energy or emotional meaning is conveyed along with the mental concept. They believe that if a spoken word comprises the root sounds that energetically correspond to its referent, it will more accurately communicate with the receiver. Kabbalists and others worry, listen to this, Alan, that modern language usage has been artificially severed from its energetic roots. For instance, English speakers no longer employ the full range of nuanced pronunciation. Thereby, we lose some of the emotive power of the words. emotive, would that mean an inner, like, emotional type of a thing?
Yeah.
He says, now, here's what we're getting to. He said, if they are correct, the result is a confusion of sounds and energies that create serious gaps in transferring knowledge and maintaining successful communication, even among people who speak the same language. With the arbitrary introduction of our artificial new words, we may add to the already socially destructive Tower of Babel phenomenon caused by many different tongues. And then I'm going to jump down to the last paragraph here. He said, if the above views have any validity, the inventors of the alphabet did not merely create an arbitrary set of symbols to go with just any spoken word. They meant it to be used to create written and thus pronounced words that accurately communicated and purposely affected ordinary reality. To fulfill this purpose, it stands to reason that the successful use of words and sentences requires that the alphabet and languages have an inherent order. Perhaps this is why nouns have verbs that connect them to a predicate in a sentence, to infuse the situation with the subtle energy of the speaker's intention. As physicists, we discover the creative power of focused intent. Multidisciplinary linguists can help sharpen our understanding of the power of the word. Perhaps we can learn to use only words whose frequencies resonate with the energies of the desired effect. For instance, we cannot talk peace into existence using the words of war, and neither can we elicit love from another using the terms of threat. Basically, what I'm hearing him saying, I think, is that as the words change, and as words have been dropped out, et cetera, that so much of that inner vibration or energy of the original word is lost.
Well, I don't go along with the magical stuff.
What magical stuff are we talking? I don't. Okay, define.
What I do go along with is the incredible loss of words.
Yep.
Of description. That's what we've been losing. George Orwell put it beautifully in his 1984 book, where he's a government employee and he meets another one who's working in the dictionary department, and he says, look at this, Winston. He says, this was last year's dictionary, it's about an inch thick. He says, next year's will be this thick, which is about half an inch. And he said, I see, when there's no more words, there can be no more thought crime.
That's, oh, no more thought crime.
Because you can't think.
Right.
You can't express an emotion.
But when you said you don't go along with the magic, what are we talking about here?
Well, I know that a lot of again, it's pushed in the New Age, the vibrational qualities of sound. And that's all part of the Kabbalah.
And you don't think there's anything to that, Alan?
Not in that sense, no. Now, you can use sounds and amplify them or alter the frequencies of them. And that's a different thing through electronics. The scientists certainly use that with the HARP project, because they go from 0 to 100 kilohertz, and that's in the brain frequencies. So those things can... But audibly, you can't hear them.
But you don't think that words... Certain words have some type of a... Okay, here's something I'm thinking about, just as an example. The word stupid versus the word harmony.
That's positive, negative. You see, negative emotion as opposed to positive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, but that does set up some type of a feeling.
Well, yeah, it's a feeling of uselessness. And you become the word because you know what it means. It means you're dull.
What about the word kids for children?
Well,
there was a reason
right.
They brought that in, Alan.
Yeah, I know. And of course, it's on everything now. Everybody says it. And in the media, I've never ever heard the media saying children. The regular media, even on the news.
So there's something to that for them.
Oh, yeah, because a kid is an animal. And they said that Stalin talks about it, so did Lenin. They dehumanize and break up the family with all these different techniques, plus the use of non-human words.
Uh-huh.
So you put these appellations on people, and it separates the humanity in them into another category.
And they get us using, well, they don't get us using them, we use them. I used it because we were called kids growing up.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, suddenly somebody said once a kid is a baby goat, and that's when it really struck me.
Yeah.
What struck me further. So not only are we calling our children baby goat.
There's an esoteric meaning behind this.
Well, what about the Baphomet, the goat of Mendes?
You see, a kid is also, as a precursor, is a goat of the domesticated sheep. So a child, being more natural and not totally conditioned, is more natural, therefore they call them the kid, whereas the people, once they're indoctrinated, they lose that creative individualism and they become a sheep.
Well, a baby sheep is called a lamb.
I know, but they come from that family.
Uh-huh.
The sheep really came from inbreeding certain stocks of different animals, of types of animals.
Really?
That goat type to create the sheep. So
well,
the domesticated type.
And maybe they also had the thought that we'd be calling our children kids, referring to a baby goat. And then when you see the Baphomet, the goat of Mendes,
that's right, yeah,
which is the universal symbol of Satan, when I saw that, I thought, my God, we're not only calling them baby goats, in a sense, we're calling them spawn of Satan for
little
them.
Devils, yeah.
For them, little devils. And
yeah.
Then a friend, when we were talking about this, and she said, not only that, but the kids were sacrificed.
Uh-huh.
In the Old Testament, they were lambs and kids that were sacrificed to Moloch, to Jehovah.
Yeah. That's the key to it. If you can dehumanize people through altering the human associations with a word, then you put them into a separate category of things and objects. And psychologically, it severs that connection of humanity. And you treat them differently.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. Would you call me New Age? What, you know me. You know me.
Well, I don't think you go around doing your chanting or channeling.
Yes, but sometimes the way you describe New Age, it's almost like you're describing me. Not like you're doing it. I'm not saying you're picking me out and talking about me. Don't get me wrong.
Uh-huh.
I know I'm reverting back to our original thing here when we were talking about New Age, but it just occurred to me that, you know, maybe you think of me as being a quote New Ager.
If you're a New Ager, you would be looking forward to the big change in humanity.
Oh.
Now listen, here's something interesting here, because Arthur C. Clarke, who did 2001 The Space Odyssey, He wrote that in the 1960s for the high ones who run this planet here, and the movie had nothing to do with space, even though it took place in space. It was an atomic ritual, high ritual, and the world was to start changing in 2001. That's what it meant. 9/11 came along in 2001.
Yes, it did.
His second movie was 2010. That's when it was to be complete. You see.
There's a movie 2010 out there?
That's right. Yeah.
Would I understand it if I watched it, Alan?
I think you would probably get it after what we've talked about so many times. You probably would.
I hope so, because I sure didn't get 2001.
No, but it's a Masonic ritual put through a story form in space. And anyway, in 2010, this guy, who basically becomes a god from the 2001, it's a continuation.
Okay.
Comes back to Earth, and a new sun is born in the sky. As above, so below, so one's born on the Earth, meaning a new man is born, you see.
Okay.
And his expression all through the movie when he comes to visit the people on Earth was, something wonderful is going to happen. Something wonderful. Whenever you hear that expression, that's the key to it. It's a Masonic, high Masonic expression for the completion of the great work. Something wonderful is going to happen. And I've heard one of the big talk show hosts recently, 2 weeks ago, used that on air when he was asked about 2010.
Who was it? Will you say who it was?
I was on his show at night.
Okay.
And a caller said, what do you think it means? is it going to be for the Mayan calendar? Maya is just I am backwards, by the way, folks.
Oh.
The Masonic coding. They weren't called that back then.
What were they called back then?
There's a massive history lesson there with different names. But it's just a rehash of something to confuse the public.
You mean they weren't actually Mayan?
When he was asked what he thought was going to happen, he said, no, I don't think it's going to be terrible. He says, I think something wonderful is going to happen.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, boy, oh, boy. Did he know what he was saying? Yeah.
So you're saying that Mayan Indians weren't really Mayan Indians?
No, you can read the histories of Latin America. It's endless. There were so many tribes and all the rest of it. The pronunciations of all the words have changed since then, too.
Wow.
You know, over and over and over.
And the Mayan calendar?
Oh, it's not even... Well, they're not even sure it's a calendar. Yeah. Except for the big authorized books that are meant to fascinate people and use predictions that can read everything into it, as well as getting a handful of pebbles and getting your own description, because it's the same way of doing it, really.
So the Mayan calendar, what we're told that there is a Mayan calendar, doesn't necessarily, quote, end at 2012? Is that all? That's all hocus pocus?
All that's going to happen in these years is the completion of an old agenda that's more to do with the West than anywhere else.
Well, let's say that's their intention. Let's not speak it in like it's coming.
Well, that's the new agers. That's what we tell them. Stop saying, look forward to this thing, because you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're asking in here.
Say again.
And it's interesting, too, if you look at Christianity, it's very similar. Because you have these vague contradictions in the New Testament to do with spirit and body. Where Jesus is asked about divorce, and he says, doesn't matter there, because in heaven there's no male nor female.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the resurrection thing where they're taught they'll be risen bodily, but given new bodies, though. Given new physical bodies, no matter how old you are. So you see.
You mean in the physical, resurrected in the physical?
Well, it's hinted at, as I say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's hinted at it'll be both, but definitely a new physical body, regardless of your age. And so it's all meant to make people look forward to this thing happening.
I see, Alan.
That's the interesting part.
Okay.
And we see where science has taken us. Oh, we're the new gods. We're going to give you brand new bodies and brand new types of humans. And yeah, well, they are, but the only thing is we won't be sentient. We won't be individuals, like they said at the Loyola meeting. They said it'll resemble the beehive. And it'll be impossible to even think of yourself as a separate, distinct individual.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's where they're all heading.
Uh-huh.
And the New Age movement, I'm talking about the big ones,
uh-huh.
That's what it was brought out to do, to make them look forward to this.
And the Bible did, too.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because people, even though, you know, the Bible talks about all the terrible things that are going to happen,
uh-huh.
they're like, oh, this is so exciting.
That's right.
Because Jesus is coming back. And it's the start of, you know, his reign for 1,000 years here.
Yeah.
So, New Age and the Christian and the Hebrew, mm-hmm. I mean, well, not Hebrew, what do we call it? We'll call it Talmudism. But it all has their adherents
uh-huh.
looking forward, and they're each looking forward to something different.
That's right. And
isn't that a shame?
Hindu is the same, because behind all of these New Age movements, they talk about the ages of man. And they mean the five stages, the five previous main stages, with a new type of creature born at the end of each circle. That's really the root cause of it.
And we're in the fifth race?
Yeah. And
what were the first four, according, Alan? Sorry? What were the first four, according to that?
That's, again, a whole... Use at all.
Oh, hell.
But anyway, they called it the fifth Aryan race, and that's what Adolf Hitler was on about. the fifth Aryan race. It's a broad spectrum meaning, although the original Aryans supposedly were the Hindus, the Brahmins.
Were they white?
They claimed they were.
So when you went to India, it isn't Hinduism that you were not introduced to, but wherever you went, it wasn't Hinduism that they adhered to.
Not everybody. There's all different branches of different sects and religions and beliefs. Many of them have things in common, certainly, because Hinduism probably affected more religions or created some. I mean, even the Buddha idea came out of India as well. And even though it had nothing to do, in fact, it was a breakaway, didn't want anything to do with Hinduism, the later followers simply tied Hinduism back onto it.
Mm-hmm.
So it truly has. And you find a lot of the stories in the Old Testament as well were taken from the old Sanskrit literature that were stolen, really.
And there would be truth in there somewhere.
Well, it doesn't mean that you get a fable that happens to have a truth because it was an older fable. We don't know. Generally, these things are allegories for a truth. That's the secret of all of this. There's generally an allegorical truth hidden within so that the profane will jump on the exoteric.
Uh-huh.
You see, that's how things are written.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's still the same today. It's never changed today. Those who want to be fascinated jump on the exoteric truth and go off on their drug-induced searches. Or they'll pay everything that they have to get a high experience, hoping to become a god in this world, really, or immortal in this world. Because all religions revolve around the fear of death in everyone. That's how they have their power and maintain their power. And so they always promise you immortality.
Immortality here in physical?
You know, that's the odd thing. So many of the New Agers really want that. And you see,
and that's what they're teaching?
Oh, yeah. That one day, if they really try... Oh, yeah, they have... they have even the breatharians, I call them, you know.
The what?
This fallacy came out of India, or at least they claimed there was a bunch of books came out back in the 60s or 70s, that some people could live now. They were so perfect, they didn't have to eat. They could just breathe air.
They
call them breatharians, yeah.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
I've been thinking of talking to Nicholas. I don't know what's on after Sweet Liberty.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes we get into a conversation,
yeah,
and to have to wait for another week to continue it is just, it's such an interruption. And I was thinking of talking to Nicholas to see if possibly we would be able to do 2 hours on a Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, you thought get rolling and then it's time for...
I know it, and then we have to wait a whole week to pick it up. Folks, we'll be back with you next Wednesday night, and you might want to go over to Alan's website. I haven't got the DVD yet, but he says it's different than anything he's done. And I'm very intrigued and can't wait to get it. So you might want to order this and see what it's all about. Alan, thanks for being here tonight again.
So I say this to the militias and all others who believe that the greatest threat to freedom comes from the government. If you appropriate our sacred symbols for paranoid purposes and compare yourselves to colonial militias who fought for the democracy you now rail against, you are wrong. How dare you call yourselves patriots and heroes? If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, you are just...